are you doing?
Good, mate. How are you?
Yeah, all right. Yeah, in a better place now with the club.
I know. Good times, isn't it?
It is, yeah. About time, though.
Yeah, yeah. Saw you went to Bournemouth. Was that a good day?
Bass, yeah. Well, we'd arranged it in the summer because we had relations in Jersey. And they said, right, come on. They're in the 20s. They said, two of them said, brothers, we're doing away games. So we've done Fulham, we've done Southampton. So they said, let's do Bournemouth. And I thought, God, we could be 10 points adrift here. You know, and no feel-good factor. But as it turned out, absolutely brilliant. 6.5 hours there on a Friday night. Got there. We had the table booked at 7:30 in a restaurant. And we got there at 7:15, setting off from all at 12. Straight in the restaurant. Yeah, good time. And we made a bit of a connection with Greg Dock's dad, and he flew down from Glasgow. He was on his own, and he said, "Do you mind if he joins us?" So we said no. So there was five of us and the doc, and yeah, we had a good night.
Yeah, excellent.
All football, Rangers and Hull City, and you know how much Greg's enjoying it down here. Yeah.
Yeah. My mate was saying this week, he claims that he came up with Doherty's chant, but I don't know if he's telling the truth or not.
I think it was John Uzzle, wasn't it? Was it John?
Did he come up with it? No, I want John. No.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't know. That's where not like came from. But yeah, back in the day when young Billy in Kempton, and there's a few of them old faces that were down there. It was more old school, you know. It was proper. Let's get behind the team stuff because of the new owner, and it was good.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you've carried on going home and away throughout the albums, haven't you? Oh, you're not really.
No, not really. I was obviously season ticket holder. Still am. Always have been unbroken right the way through the pandemic as well. I'd gone to Stoke when we'd got done five. That was the last away game you could possibly have gone to before the lockdown. And then after that, which is a long time for me, probably this season really, not gone to one until Blackpool.
Oh, so okay, missed
Huddersfield and can't even remember what games we had. West Brom, yeah, games, and just didn't fancy it, couldn't get the motivation for away games. And then when there was a sniff of a sale, New Year's Day, we're thinking, right, Blackpool, good day out again. And then Bournemouth. And then obviously we've got Sheffield United or Derby, Sheffield United coming up. So I'm with my son sort of like 6 months before he goes travelling. He wants to cram as many games in as possible. He's 22 and he says he doesn't mind driving. So yeah, makes it easy.
Yeah, spot on. No, I'm the same, mate. Like, I did actually go to Preston away at the beginning of the season. But before that was, the last one I went to before that was Birmingham, where we lost 4-0. I remember seeing you there, actually.
Probably will. I can't remember all these bad defeats, mate. Long, don't they?
Yeah. But yeah, I'm looking forward to a few now. I'm going tomorrow and then going Coventry away, I think. And Peterborough, so it should be good.
Peterborough, yeah. Coventry's always a good... I don't mind Coventry. I mean, obviously, it'll have changed around the ground from when we were there last, but I like the stadium. I just like the ball.
I've never been, yeah.
Yeah, it's... I think I've been twice. I think once John Welsh scored two, I think, and it was summertime, and I think Nick Barnby got us a... equaliser in about the 89th minute, and I think my son was about 6 at the time, and in the celebrations I pushed him 3 rows down and got a bloody nose, but he's pushing me about now when we score, so I think the roles have reversed.
What age did he start taking him out of interest, because I've got a 2-year-old, so
right now he was 5. I took him to Luton and we got beat. I think it was when we were going up with them. At the time, we'd had a little bit of a battle for a couple of years. And I think they went up as champions and we was runners up. And then we went there next year, the year after in the championship, and they went one up And I can just remember them singing, "That's Why We're Champions." And we went and did them 3-1. I think Stewie Elliott got a couple, and it was, yeah, it was sweet when, you know, they'd won the league, which it always is. And then you go, you have another crack at them the next season and you turn them over. So yeah, it's been some memorable games. But his was, yeah, Luton. God, what would it have been? He'd been five, so it'd have been eight, 2004. Curtis Davis. Right, yeah.
Did he get quite used to all the success then?
Well, again, you talk to lads who were sub 25, and up until last season, our entire footballing, their entire footballing career watching Hull City, Leeds United had never, ever been above us.
That's mad, isn't it?
The whole of that time. So this thing of us with Leeds being above us, my age group, Leeds being above us, Leeds doing this, doing that, Europe, whatever. Leeds have always been below us. Obviously, he knows the history behind it, but, you know, he brought it up and said, "I don't know what's going on here." You know, they've never been above us, but obviously the last 2 years they have, which ain't great, is it?
Nah, I suppose it's been like the last of our problems, hasn't it, recently, but it'd be nice to close the gap again now.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I suppose all the lads, what the lads look at now, again, in that sub 25 age group, is how is Chef Wednesday doing? How are Leeds doing? You know, in our day, it was, you know, how was Grimsby doing? How was Scunthorpe doing? How was York doing? But they're looking at, you know, how is Sheffield United doing now? How is Chef Wednesday doing? All they know is us beating them at Wembley. You know, that's what they were brought up on. So, and when you go to the games now and you see these lads who are, you know, around the 25 mark to the 20 mark, they were all brought up on success.
Yeah.
So this is the norm for them now. You know, getting back to normal. Oh, we're back to normal now for them. And it's nice to hear.
Yeah, yeah.
But fans forever, and that's what we don't want to lose.
No, definitely. It's interesting. Because I didn't know how I'd react to when we got new owners. I thought, you know, I thought I'd be into it again. But yeah, it seems like there's still a bit of a tail off. I thought it might be like 20,000 odd, but it's nowhere near that, is it?
No, it will do. It will do. It's, you know, I work in a factory environment, and you can gauge it from a large company. And it's like people are starting to ask questions now. You can gauge it. You've got your diehards. Then you've got the out-of-habits supporters, which we had probably 5,000 or 6,000 out-of-habit supporters. And then you've got what you call your Premier League supporters. So it's going to take time to get the, you know, out-of-habit guys back, families. You know, they're doing other things, but big City fans, you know, always take note of, you know, the results or listen on or watch television or whatever, whichever means you follow the club through. And that's the target, to go from now 13 to 18. And to get those back is results. And the results are looking up. The feel-good factor's there. The owner can't do anymore. He's done his bit. Now it's up to the fans and the players to make it happen. But I think, for me, 13,000 there last week with an atmosphere like that has been far better than with 20,000 in. You know, you just look at the ticket sales for the East Stand now. It was, what, 50 tickets left in the East Stand Friday before a game? And you know that every one of those in that East Stand are right behind the team and the regime. So long may it continue.
Yeah, yeah. Whereabouts do you sit in East Stand? Oh, he used to be in front of me. He was at E4.
No, E6.
Okay, E6. Right.
I can't. When everybody was moving, North Stand and all the rest of it, it would have cost me probably a couple of thousand to move, because my number plates on my car and my wife's car are E6. So I had no chance of moving. So, yeah, E6. So,
good spot, innit?
Yeah, it's dead. It's halfway line, halfway up. Just, you know, it's like director's box opposite.
Yeah, yeah.
front row of the director's box. I'm in eyeline, as I used to call it, with Adam, you know, best chairman probably ever. And I hope this guy can get somewhere near.
Yeah, yeah. He still sat with all the old faces like John and everyone.
Yeah, we've had a bit of a shuffle, you know. Obviously, they tried to split us up, didn't they? We lost some good lads around us because they had families, young lads, grandparents, whatever. It was a good mix, but the lads who we've got round there, Jimmy Chew's about again, so, you know, and the same old faces. But even the new faces are still old fans because they've gravitated to a good viewing point. So, yeah, we've got one or two. Jürgen Klopp and Pep Guardiola sat around us as we all have in the ground, don't we? You know, get it forward as quick as you can, you know, merchants. And if you saw that goal last week where every player had passed the ball and we scored the goal, you know, if somebody starts moaning, going, get it forward, just go back to the Swansea goal with Eves on the end of it. That's just, you know, horses for courses. You do have to get it forward at times, but I think the key word with any football team is patience. You've got to move the opposition about before you can, you know, find your way through.
What are your first memories of Boothry Park?
First memories, God, 73, Blackpool. Didn't go for another season because I was too young. That was a treat. Then the next season, funnily enough, Blackpool again, 74. And then 75 was my first full season. So, yeah, you know, you can just recite the team straight away. You know, your Whelans, Daniels, De Vries, Croft, Roberts, Grimes, Lyle, McGill. And then we had a bit of we actually spent some money and we bought Alan Warboys and Bruce Bannister, and that was one sub period. And then we brought in, you know, the guy that was my era hero was, you know, your Keith Edwards. He was our man. You know, we pinned everything on Keith Edwards, and he was a hero and a villain. So, yeah. But, yeah, good times watching. When you're a young kid, you know, 12, 11, 12, 13, and these are the players that you looked up to and you class as your era. I don't really class the 90s as my era. The 80s were my era. And then, you know, we came across that side that Brian Orton put together. Colin Appleton started and Brian Orton galvanised it and we finished sixth before the playoffs, the year before the playoffs. That was a great side and we never saw the likes of them till Adam took over.
And we always... Kempton, or how did it work?
No, I was a South Stand seat boy. I was a trendy with me Adidas Cagoule. you were a bit upmarket if you sat in the seats in them days. Yeah, you had the Kempton lot that I used to go in seats, and I think it was all about football style, clothing, wasn't it? It was more important then in them days what you were wearing for the game, never mind how we were playing. Nah, but joking aside, yeah, it was a great era. When the players used to come out on a Saturday night, you know, they're always in, well, started off in Empress. You know, when the bus dropped them off after Orient, 5-4, November, the 21st, no, not 21st, can't remember, whatever birthday it was. And we've gone in Empress, and they're all in there, Tony Norman and Skip and Stan McHugh and Andy Flanders, all, and all right, lads, what a result, you know, 4-1 down and we win 5-4. And I still kick myself to this day, but I think it was the 21st or whatever. And I was going to Romeo's. And they were all off to Waterford. But I was just out with the lads Wednesday night. I'd gone to see a concert. Jamie Webster, good guy, by the way. He's the one who does all the Liverpool songs when they go away, but he's trying to make a career out of his new album. And the young lads were saying, oh, it's crap now, all's crap now. I'm saying, no. Hull is a good place. We made it a good place. You were queuing up to get in pubs and nightclubs and everything. I said, it's your era that's letting it down. Get your backsides out instead of sat in somebody's house having a beer, you know, watching Sky. Get out and support the local pubs and, you know, music venues and everything. But, yeah, anyway, that's my opponent then, that they're not having it. But That's down to them.
Were you always a three tons person or not?
Yeah. Well, started off in five ways, to be fair. And then met friends for life in five ways. The lads from South Cave and Cot, Ian Bunton, your Ed Cooks, Nick Walker, God bless him, who's passed away. And then Rich Hewson and Tony Klein. And we all met in there, and we're still friends now. And we still go in malt shovel, all of us, still the same group. So then we gravitated from five ways to three tons. And John Windus used to come, and Dean's dad used to come and join us every home game, come and sit with us when Dean was back at the club. And stayed friends all this time, and grown old with it. So we've gone right through all the emotions from bottom of the league, Scarborough games, to FA Cup finals when we were still all sat together, and you 2-0 up and there's your pinnacle, isn't it? But there you go, that's history now.
So like, you talk about the high point of that late 80s team. Like, when did you notice it was turning for the worst, kind of thing? Was it when Dolan came in?
It was well before that, I think. We sold Gary Parker to Forest for about 230. And he was, if we were going to do anything, it was with Gary Parker in the team. Because you had Gareth one side, Billy Askew the other. And we had a kid called Doyle from Portsmouth who broke everything up and allowed Gary Parker to play. And he was still getting on England under 21 caps at the time. And it was just a really solid outfit. And Billy Whitehurst was top of his game. Frankie Bunn, when he first came, was firing. And we were turning sides over, good sides. And we finished sixth. And like I say, if it had been in this day and age, would have been in the playoffs. But it was the year before. And then from when we sold Gary Parker that year, then the decline started. And we started to bring young lads through, Andy Savin, Andy Payton, you know, good players, but we were losing too many quality players to do any good in the Championship or, you know, whatever it was then, League Two. But we stayed with it, as you do, and, you know, we went through some lows, through some massive lows. But, yeah, it's... You know, it's pleasurable now, thank God.
Yeah. I was speaking to Colin Young this week, the old City journalist, yeah, from Holiday Mail.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was kind of asking him, like, looking back now, right, reading the decade and stuff like that, that era of Fish and Dolan, a lot of the reflection is, you know, they did the best with the situation they were put in. But is that how you remember it?
In hindsight now, you look at it, it was a very, very difficult period where we just seemed to be owing people money left, right and centre. Sam Corkill was doing a good job behind the scenes, but we used to try and support the club as best we could. And Gary Clark, Chance DIY, he used to be match ball sponsor. And, he, you know, great Gary, give Hull City his last penny. But you can't have a DIY corner shop being match ball sponsor, it won't be heard of nowadays, but we used to get behind it and try and help Gary and, you know, the same Coral lads who I just mentioned. And, you know, you were playing daft auto windscreen cup games and we'd get a box and pay well over the odds. What I think it was, you know, ridiculous amount of money to get in, pennies, but because we wanted to support the club, we would pay treble that just to try and support the club to just keep it going. You know, it was our club. And it was just being, you know, Martin Fish, he was on an adding to nothing. He made some horrendous decisions, but it was all in the best interest, I suppose, to keep the club afloat. But when it was muted that we were going to have to play in Scarborough or York or Grimsby or Scunthorpe for home games because we couldn't keep the upkeep up on Bulfrey Park, you're thinking, can't get any worse than this. We're grovelling to Grimsby and Scunthorpe and York. And the ground was falling to pieces. But again, you know, you gave your last penny, you know, blanket collections and Halifax at home and we're getting closed down and, you know, we'll always rally around, always. You'll always get people coming out the woodwork to support, you know, even anonymous people. And because it's a community thing, isn't it? But hopefully those days are behind us.
We've had some low points recently, but it's hard to compare when you know we're quite financially stable. But yeah, I suppose it's different.
Yeah. Yeah, his hands were tied. His hands were tied. But it's, I don't know, if you ask the man now, why did we play that style of football? Because we couldn't afford footballers. You know, we had to go direct at times. And, you know, it wasn't until Warren Joyce came in and signed Whitmore and Goodison and, you know, we had some good players under or solid pros, and we did try and play under Warren Joyce. He was a player. He used to, you know, he used to like get it down and try and play. Terry Dolan probably liked to get it down and try and play, but he didn't have the tools to do it. So that's probably why, you know, we had some, I'm not going to name names, but we had some, I can't even say bang average. I don't think they were bang average. They were lucky to play in the Football League, but it was horses for courses. Finances dictated that we could only afford non-league players, and they were playing in the league. So that's the proof's in the pudding. You know, you're in the bottom two for a reason. But yeah, Warren came in and did a good job.
Yeah, I was saying that Bradford game with the riots, I kind of remember that as probably the low point of the 90s, even though we went further down in the divisions. Would you agree with that or not?
Yeah, that game sticks out, obviously. Motions running very high. Phoning on the Tuesday night, remember it well. Dave Gibbons, I'm sure it was Dave Gibbons, the radio homicide reporter. He was antagonistic. Used to like winding people up, and it was getting to fever pitch. And it said that the police coordinator at the time, he said that, you know, he wanted Bradford in the south stand because it was a health and safety issue. Well, it isn't. Just sell them the tickets, what they're allowed, and leave it as it is. But yeah, emotions running very high that day. It's carnage. You know, all the streets, around the streets, in the ground, on the pitch. It was a sad day, really, that, you know, even your most placid of fans were irate, you know, male and female. And when it comes to that, then, you know, your club's in trouble. And I think he still stood by his decision to do what he did. But it could have been far worse than it was. Obviously, it made national news, 9 o'clock news on the Saturday and everything. But another one that sticks out was when we went to Doncaster and they were bottom. And we were second to bottom when we got beat 1-0. And I came away from that and I thought, I don't think I've ever seen us play as bad as that ever. And I thought, this is it. We're going out the league, you know. And then obviously we improved after that, but only just, and survived by the skin of our teeth. So yeah, I would say Doncaster and the Bradford game, it, a horrible time to support the club, you know. And any lads who came up through that period, if they're 10, 11, 12, wanting to latch onto the local club, you go to school on a Monday and, you know, you've got beat by Doncaster, bottom of the league, and there's the Man U, Chelsea, Leeds shirts all there. It's character building. So credit to them lads who came through that period.
Now I remember getting, well, taking the piss out of at primary school, yeah. Because it was, I think people probably played down how big, sort of how much people were supporting Premier League instead of City back then. It was really rare to see City shirts in the street.
Very rare, very rare. As I say to people now, you know, when we were going to Wembley, and, you know, not naming names, and you know of the odd fan who supports a Premier League team, and, you know, I used to say, well, wow, you know, if you hadn't jumped ship all those years ago, you could be enjoying this with people who you've grown up with, people who you've gone to school with, your family. You know, how many times have you been with your club to Wembley, actually gone in a car to Wembley with your family to watch your team? There ain't many. All right, there might be Premier League fans, but they go on their own. Or, all right, I might have one or two friends. I'm being selfish, I suppose. I don't think you can ever beat supporting your local team. A, from coming from the depths where we did do, but I've no qualms about people joining when we were in the Premier. You've got to become a fan at some point. You know, whether it's Premier League, whether it's the bottom league, you know, I don't knock anybody as long as support our team.
Mark Hatley, why do you think he didn't get anywhere near the stick that other bad managers got.
Yeah, good point. I think people realised it was promised to the earth and got nothing, because the promises were we were going to spend money. And I think we spent 40 grand on Scott Thompson, the keeper, and that was it. And the rest were all free transfers of connections. We got Brian McGinty from Rangers. See the lad's name? Escapes me.
Boyack.
Stephen Boyack. Yeah, good player. Both good players. So they were cheap signings, loans. John French, Matt Hocking, Stephen Hawes. Yeah. Then all free signings. So never spent a penny. Oh, you know, Durant's coming. You know, not a chance. You know, we couldn't afford wages like that. So I think the fans saw through the regime that got him here, promised him the earth, and gave him nothing. But obviously he came on the pretense that he was going to get the money, and also he was on a good deal, you know, and especially when he used to cross that white line for appearance money. So that's why he came. I don't ever feel sorry for pro footballers, pro managers, because they're never going to struggle to pay the gas or electric bill like your average working man. But in terms of, he was probably sold down the river a bit. I bet he regrets it. But I always remember him being on the television after he'd left, and he was co-commentating or on a panel, and somebody said to him, "Do you think this club will ever do anything?" And he said, "Yeah." He said, "Under the right regime, this club can go to the top." And it just stuck with me. And I thought, he's seen something that we all believed in. That was like the tip of the iceberg then. And I'm thinking, can we do it? People always say, or said, we'll never get to the top flight. We'll never get to the top flight. You know, once we got there, now people, I mean, I just hope tomorrow we could, you know, if we don't win, we can start concentrating on staying in the league rather than worrying whether we're going to get in the playoffs. Let's get back to concentrating on staying in the league. Let's not get too giddy, because people get it now. We can do it. We've done it, you know.
Yeah.
We've done it, and the young kids know we can do it because we have done it. In those days, we'll never do it. We'll never get in that top flight. And then that's why it was just an amazing time in 2008 for the whole city. And you saw people who wouldn't even watch Hull City out the back door getting involved, buying into it, going to, and the passion and the feel-good factor and the roll-on from that. Tremendous.
Now, I remember there's one bloke in particular that stands out with that. I remember during the 90s, like, he was staunch Arsenal, and then the next time I saw him, he was going to City every week 10 years yeah. later. Which, yeah. Like you say, you can't begrudge him, it's just funny, isn't it?
No, you've got to take him on board, because you need that support to get your full houses, to get your players. Yeah, you know, you have to bite your tongue, don't you, sometimes. And I thought you were a so-and-so. You know, and it isn't. You just come on board and support the team. And I think one of the big things we've got to do now is get the businesses back on side. We've got some good backroom staff at the club now, not on the football side, on the commercial side. And they'll have the tools of the trade to work with now. Whereas before, I think there was a lot of damage done and people probably wouldn't pick up the phone to them. Whereas now, you get a big success breeds success, and people want to jump on board, and your bigger companies will start to come back. But a lot of damage done. You get a little bit of success between now and the end of the season, then people want a piece of it. So they've been there before, they'll be back.
Yeah, just going back to Lloyd's here, I just remember it's kind of a very strange period where, you know, there was talk of moving to the Boulevard and Hull Sharks were playing at Boothry Park. I remember the likes of it, like likes of Ed Cook were, you know, livid about stuff like that. Like, how do you remember it?
Yeah, it could never happen. I mean, I know we started off at the Boulevard, but everybody's played at everybody else's ground, didn't they? I mean, let's remember, Craig, Hull Kingston Rovers started at the Boulevard. That was their home ground. So we've all mixed and matched over the years. It was a strange time, because when you're down there, you're getting kicked from pillar to post, and you just have to fight your corner. And I know we all didn't like David Lloyd, but when he wanted the club moving to the Boulevard, he wanted that. He was advised that by whom, I don't know. And then when he went to Belfry Park and he saw the pitch and he went, there's no way we're moving from here. So for all the bad that he did, he probably saved us from going there because he wanted to merge the two clubs. Pretty much what it is now, really. You know, I mean, we'd all love Adam back, wouldn't we, running both clubs. That'd be the ideal scenario. One owner of Hull City and Adam getting a salary for running Hull City and running Hull. And everybody's happy because you do need everybody pulling in the same direction. You can't have him fighting, you know. And, you know, I've got a lot of friends, more so in that age group now, at the 20, sub-25. The season ticket holders at the rugby and the football. That's the way you want the whole City to move for it to be successful. You can't have Hull pulling one way and City pulling another. You've got, because we're in the same ground, you've got to have that good partnership. And that'll breed good sponsorship and bring money in. You know, I feel for Adam at times because I'm sure the majority of it is his own money, and he's a good man, he's Adam. And I know he'd jump at the chance of running Hull City and Hull FC and the stadium management company, because everybody in Hull trusts Adam Pearson. I don't think there's anybody who doesn't. Hull have had the most successful time with Adam, and Hull City moved out of Belfry Park under Adam. He just couldn't push any further. But for me, the ideal scenario would be Adam running the full lot for our new owner, and I'm sure they'll be having a meeting soon. I think the stadium management company changed over yesterday, didn't it? The 3rd of February. So whether that'll happen, I don't think it will, but you just hope that there's no animosity, because, you know, you want rugby fans going to football and football fans going to rugby, because, you know, they need to make money. And for us to get 25,000, we need everybody on board. You know, you can't disregard anybody. And for me, again, I know I'm ranting on. What I would do, no brainer, pre-season friendly, I would go to Craven Park, I would play one game out against whoever, probably try and get a name, probably try and get something like an Aston Villa or an Everton in a pre-season game. And I'd say, right, what does it all, Craven Park, to be safe, say 7,000 pre-season game. I'd say every child in East Hull comes in for free, with an adult paying £5. If you get 7,000 in, I'd put a scarf on every seat for the kids, and I would just fill the place, and Hull Kingston Rovers take the full profit from the game. You know, the gate receipts, the bar takings, the hospitality. Rovers are winners, gives them a nice little build-up for the season. City are winners because we've never tapped into the East Hull market, and we've never driven in there. Obviously, we've got, you know, a big following from the East, but we need more. There's far more you can tap into. And to do that, you've got to get all the schools involved and just go into the schools and just say, right, Craven. We all went to Craven Park. Emiliano Sala, the Cardiff lad who played for the French team, he played at Craven Park. And I went, and I'm there, and I think there was about 2,000 there. Fraser Campbell was playing his first game back. And I thought, this place with 6,000 or 7,000 in, with the merchandise, like the Leicester guys done, do it for one game. You know, just do it. No brainer. Tap into the East Hull market.
You could see the new owner doing something like that, to be fair. He's that way inclined, isn't he?
If he's advised.
Yeah, exactly,
He won't know about that. He doesn't even know Craven Park exists, but he needs to be educated about the local history of the rugby clubs, the football club, you know, where we need to go into, you know, even the West Hull villages, East Hull villages, East Riding, you know, up to Withernsea, Brid, even across to Barton, you know, into the south side of the bridge, but yeah, there's so much potential. I'm sure the backroom staff will be able to, you know, they'll have tons of ideas that they've not been able to put or follow through. This guy, you know, get the money into the women's Hull City team. You know, being pushed out at Haworth Park not being funded by the football club, disgrace. This guy will probably get on board with it, you know, and get the 23s back at Ferriby, get Ferriby some money in, you know. So it's all about supporting everybody else. Get, you know, Ferriby, Ferriby on board. But yeah.
And there's stuff with the Gemtech Arena, weren't there?
Yeah. That, I mean, that's just, that was another one, and it should never have happened. Watford gained, it was obviously to get a cap two for the youth setup. They did it, but they're on a putting a bubble pitch on the back of that. And I went down to have a look the other day, and I'm thinking, you can't get a bubble pitch on the back of it. It'll be, you know, not much bigger than the five-a-side pitch. If you're going to do it, there's been no legacy, has there, from Premiership money? No, okay, we've got the great memories. But Burnley, Leicester, these training, state-of-the-art training grounds, you know, Forest, Derby, not been in the Premier League for God knows how long. Just Sheffield United, Sheffield, you can go on. You know, the training facilities are class. I mean, we've got Millhouse Woods Lane, nice and tidy, but you want to try and get the 23s and the first team and the kids down there, you've no chance. You know, you've got to go up and rent a place at Bishop Burton College, which is not ideal. Let's get a purpose-built place. And then when the club becomes saleable again, it's an asset to sell.
We'll go back to the Great Escape season when things started to turn upwards. That Scarborough game, like, where does that rank in terms of kind of exciting days as a City fan for you?
Got to be up there, hasn't it? It was massive, a lovely day as well. I can't remember what the official attendance was. I think it might have been 16.
Yeah.
I remember Tom Belton, the chairman, coming into the Three Tons after the game, laughing, going, we're going to be shut down. We're going to be shut down. Health and safety was just ridiculous. People were just piling into Kempton, weren't they? And, you know, well, we're only allowed so many. And they opened the gate and just let everybody in. It could have been a bit scary, to be fair, but it all went off without major incident, which was good. But, yeah, perfect. 1-1. We knew we were staying up. You know, we knew we had the players. We were signing Williams from Scarborough, the forward. And, you know, then you had all your hard nuts in your Brabin and your Whitney's and the Welsh kid.
Perry, was it?
Yeah, Jason Perry. Yeah, Swales. And we just grew from that point. You know, we grew and we went up that table, didn't we? And we got into the playoffs. Was it the year after or the year after that?
A couple of years, yeah, I think.
Yeah, a couple of years for the Orient game, yeah. But yeah, Scarborough, I always remember that one because everybody, every young lad, and not so many girls at the time because the facilities were shocking. You couldn't take, you know, the people that go to the KC now, you couldn't go to the toilet half time. It was embarrassing, but it was mainly followed by young males from young teenagers to mid-40s, 50s, and it was just a male-orientated time. Was football then, 80s, 90s, especially in Hull. He never got females until we went, you know, a good percentage didn't go till we got to the KC, and it allowed them to go with decent facilities. And our female fan base has exploded, hasn't it? You know, you can see.
I always remember the last game of that season against Torquay. Seemed to be singing Great Escape for about the full second half.
Yeah,
well, what are your memories of that? Yeah.
Well, it's, do you know what? It goes down to your dad, Harry. Ed Cook, who you mentioned earlier, when he was distraught about going to the Boulevard and we're at his wedding, and we sat round the table at the reception, and I'm on the table with your dad. Great memories. And just come on, hurry up, get that best man's speech finished. Come on, get that. You know, the speech is out the way. Me and your dad were just talking City all the time. And he went, you're passionate, aren't you, Brian? Come on, mate, what can we do to get the atmosphere back at Bulfrey Park? I said, well, when Kempton gets up, we've got half a chance. And he went, yeah, you know, I do my bit, but, you know, you can only bang the drum for so... And then Kempton started to increase, and they tried their best to get it open, and they did. And I just come up with, I'd been to a game, and I'm not going to mention the club, but I'd seen it done. And I said, right, try this. I said, try introducing each stand. And he went, right, I'll do it. I'll give it a go. And the rest is history. And it served its time. It did serve its time. And everybody loved it at the time. But you move on. You've got to move pre-match entertainment on. But it worked for Hull City at the time. And Kempton was like so passionate towards the end of Bloomsbury Park. It was brought back great memories. I mean, when we scored, you used to lose trainers. You know, your shirt was ripped. You know, you think, when you lost your trainer in there, that was it. You had to stand with one trainer on, one trainer off till, you know, everybody had left at the end. But yeah, it was carnage in Kempton. It was great, great memories and great atmosphere. And it gave the club a heartbeat again, which we hadn't had for years and years and years. And your dad attributed to that. He was, you know, he bought into it. Well, he created it, really. You know, he didn't buy into it. He was sort of like the passion because of what his career was, the acting side of it. And he got it. He got what entertainment was about. And the things what were good about your dad was when, I know this is sad, but when somebody used to pass away, he was so good at reading out of, you know, the obituary or whatever it's called, to about the person. It had you in tears, even if you didn't know the guy, you know. And he was so good at that. And he was part of the resurgence of Hull City when your dad came in. It worked together. We bounced off. He was the man with a mic who could create that, you know, rumble, and then Kempton just took off from there. And it was in, you know, it was a good partnership. He must have loved it. Well, I know he loved it.
Yeah. I think there's something about Bloomsbury Park for him and me, really, that's you can't really replicate. Obviously enjoyed the success that came, but yeah, it was unique.
Yeah, definitely. And I don't think, you know, I still maintain we've never had anybody who's good on match announcing than your dad. You know, certain people used to frustrate me because we didn't introduce people right, you know, a big welcome return too. I mean, it frustrated me the other night where we didn't get a welcome for Regan Slater last Saturday, you know, and welcome back to the KC. He'd have got a fantastic reception, but substitute for Hull City is so-and-so coming on is so-and-so. Flat. You know, and a big welcome back to the KC. Regan Slater, but he just came on, and I mean, that's me, entertainment side of it, you know, get the crowd involved, and you know, but there, you know, it will get better, whoever's doing it. I'm not sure who is doing it now, Sam Jordan's not there. But yeah, I think we can improve on that side.
Yeah, the going around the ground thing, I think it peaked at Orient at home, didn't it? Playoffs that season was unbelievable with Kevin Francis, the atmosphere in Kempton.
Yeah, I mean, he wasn't the best player, was he? But it's a bit of an Eves, you know, the crowd actually make them perform. And I don't want to be detrimental, but above the levels. I mean, Tom Eves is... I think there's been like 50 Tom Eves in a room, and we just take one out every week and put him on the pitch. And we've finally got to the 37th Tom Eves, and it's the right one. And we keep bringing that one out every week now. But how must it be that the crowd sing his name and his touch becomes better, his awareness becomes better, his finishing becomes better, his hold-up play becomes better? Because he knows the crowd aren't going to cane him if he makes a bad touch. They'll let him off. Whereas years ago, if you were a boo boy, a player couldn't, you know, players used to crumble under it. We had a kid, Matthews, under the winger, who we'd signed, I remember him crumbling, and the left back Sean Smith crumbling, and you know, but Kevin Francis, everybody bought into him. It was so awkward, it was unbelievable. But he'd become a legend, but he was miles off. You know, I don't know. Do you have to be that? it sounds bad. You have to be that bad to become a club legend. I don't know. But
it's just the underdog thing, isn't it, I guess?
Yeah, I suppose it is, yeah. Yeah, but he bought into it as well. So, yeah, he's got some good goals. And, yeah, we good character. And Kempton, again, was at its best that season.
What player or club figure comes to mind when you think of Boothby Park?
I have got to go to Keith Edwards and Gareth Roberts. Yeah, those two. Sorry, I know you say one, but I've got to put two in. Gareth for being local born and bred and one club man. Keith Edwards for being the hero, for scoring the goals, you know. Yeah, first you always look at your centre forward, so yeah, go with them two.
Is there a goal that stands out from Boothby Park?
Well, obviously, I've seen it might be thousands. Don't know. But yeah, there's the Keith Edwards one against Chester when we thought, wow, this is it. Like the touch paper were off and it was a sunny day and we beat 3-1. I think we went second or top and he ran from the halfway line, scored one of his three goals of that day. Amazing run. And he never used to break the back of the net. He just used to slide it in. So, yeah, I'll go Keith Edwards against Chester. Johnny Ayres against Orient as well. You know,
yeah, so. Similar question, but is there a high point from Boothby Park?
I don't think there was. I think it was the Orient game.
Yeah.
I think it was the Orient game. You know, it was that Boothby Park was all about lifelong friends and you know, the big games we always used to lose. You know, people talk about Liverpool at home. We got beat. York, last game of the season when we'd gone up. Bank Holiday Monday, 16,000 there. We got beat. Southampton at home, League Cup, drawn down there, brought them back here, 16,000. We got beat. So there was never any, like, really big games that we went out and won. Watford at home, 2-0 up. They scored two, took us to a third replay. Went out on penalties, I think, back down at Vicarage Road. We never won until we got to the KC. You know, I missed the Wagstaff, Chilton, Houghton, Butler period. I was too young for that. That must have been a fantastic, you know, 35,000, 40,000. Wow. You know, those were the games to be at. But I went and our average was 5,300 for two seasons. And then we got relegated. So I couldn't have supported the club at a worse time. But
yeah, I remember people saying it's quite fitting that we lost the last game against Darlington, really.
Yeah, I'd go along with that, really. You know. And I don't get this typical City thing now that got blown out of the water in the first promotion at Yeovil. And, you know, there was no more typical City because, you know, and we never win on Sky. Well, you know, just go to the playoff finals and, you know, Watford and your Watford at home, your Derby's away, you know, the big games we've turned up.
Most memorable match, if we haven't covered that already?
Definitely the Orient game. Got to be the Orient game to win 1-0. Obviously, we went there on the Tuesday night and got beat 2-0. But, yeah, you know, that goal goes in and everybody's on the pitch, aren't they? And I just remember Kempton spilling out and it was a warm day. And then you thought, wow, we're in the playoffs. You know, we're going to the Millennium Stadium. But it didn't happen. But, yeah, that was one of the biggest memories for me. Great.
We've talked about it rarely, but how do you reflect on Boothby Park in terms of how, you know, how it's different to the KC kind of thing? Because there's a quote from Dina that I've mentioned a few times that says, you know, we love the KC and the success, but we all deep down wish it was at Boothby Park.
Boothby Park, when I first went in 73, was class because it had the north stand and it had the seats and the standing. And if you were ever invited to City training on a Tuesday and Thursday with Pete Sissons in the gym, just had this smell about it. It was unreal. It was massive. And you weren't allowed in unless you had the right trainers on. It was a polished floor. And the goals, years ago, Chelsea used to have these goals with the stanchions that used to go back for miles in the 70s, if you ever watch any old clips of Chelsea. And City had these goals in the gym and they had four goals. And you used to go in there as a 11, 12-year-old kid indoors and kick a ball and not even reach the far side of the wall. You had to kick it three or four times to go from one end of the gym to the other, and it was pristine. It was absolutely fantastic. And the ground was great. You know, South Stand was great. Kempton was fully open. North Stand was open, fully, bar, clubhouse, everything. So then, yeah, great. 90s, depressing place. you know, getting thumped every week, buying ban average players, all on frees. For 10 years, it was not a good place to be. But it was your club, and you went. You know, there was no other swanning off down the road to watch another team. You know, you stuck with it. And the times you used to come in and wait for the sports mailman to come at 6 o'clock or go to your local shop to get the paper. And, you know, it's what you grew up with. But, yeah, then everybody's grown up with those times who've moved grounds. But, no, I don't miss it. I miss Kempton, back end. But south stand seats, blowing a gale when there's nobody sat around you. Nah, I would say give me Casey any time.
Yeah, probably a good finishing point that, so appreciate that, mate.
Yeah, no, I've enjoyed it. It's brought back a few memories. But yeah, we've started another journey. Where it'll take us, you know, every owner, whichever comes into Hull City, always get full backing. And we know we've been bitten two or three times. But you've still got to put everything behind the new owner. Everything so far is you know, he's put his money where his mouth is. I'm pleased he didn't go ridiculous and sign Babbel and people like that, gimmick players. I think we've been sensible and put all our eggs in one basket. Have a good look at the loan players, as it's shown with Longman. Can we keep him? You know, you get a chance to... And it doesn't upset the apple cart as in wages, because these lads who have come in are getting paid by the clubs as well. So the lads who are all due, every one of them are due a rise, because we're on a League One budget, and that's, you know, allegedly. Every single one of those lads who went up last year deserve a rise. I'm sure they'll get it. But the lads who have come in aren't going to be on massive money paid by Hull City. They'll be paid by the other clubs. So the lads, there'll be no... Or, you know, he's on 10 grand more than me a week, or he's on this. You know, by the summer, everybody will be on a level peg and everybody will be on the right money, what they should be on, that what the club can afford at championship level, and everybody's happy. Let's not run before we can walk. Let's build it, as we've seen before, as Adam did it. You know, Adam pushed the boat out. We don't need to spend 5 and 6 million yet, until we get the sponsorships, until we get the 16, 17, 18,000 gates, let's increase it slowly. Fans aren't crying out for big money signings. We want a team that'll go out there on a Saturday, compete, give it their all, win, lose or draw. We'll all go for a pint after the game and say, well, do you know what? Every one of them had a go today, but we just weren't good enough, as we did against Bournemouth. We weren't good enough, but we came away with the 3 points. So... Am I being detrimental to the lads? Probably, because we did work hard. You don't win games by skill alone. So the endeavour that they showed down there, if we show that for the rest of the season, we won't go far wrong. You'll never catch that
tiger, it's next to the side, oh. Thanks for listening to this episode of This Was Boothry Park. As always, just like to give a quick shout out to those who made the research easy, including OnCloud7, Tiger Tube Player, Tiger Bass, and Rich Gardens The Decade.